from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Hey, good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. How's it going?
It's good. Happy Monday. Did you just hear what I just said?
I did.
Okay.
Did you do that on purpose?
No, I did not. No, I actually did not do that.
We've been talking about how today feels like a Monday. I think for all of us. I'm going to blame it on the fact that the sun is not shining right
it's
now.
It's supposed to come out, Ursula and Jean. I'm just waiting for it. I don't believe it yet.
Okay.
I'll believe it when I see it.
It was my job to make this a actual Wednesday, and I'm doing a terrible job, Ursula. Well, you know who has a chance to maybe help us out? Coming in at 10:33, Michael Medved will join us to give his reaction to what's happening with Liz Cheney. But right now, it's time for Three Things at 10.
And we're going to start with number one. And between eviction moratoriums and other changes in the law that help renters, many Seattle landlords say they are giving up. And as Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott reports, many are now selling their properties.
The threat of landlords fleeing the market has long been the boogeyman anytime new renter protections are proposed, and that's been especially true this past year. But is it really happening? Yes, at least to some degree.
I am divesting myself of my rental properties in Seattle quite systematically. I started doing that, I would say, 5 or 6 years ago. I sold two of them last year in the middle of the pandemic, which was not easy. So I'm one of those people that's kind of on my way out of the system instead of coming into it.
Carol Willison has owned several Seattle rental properties for decades.
The two houses I sold this last year, one I owned for 47 years, the other one I owned for 26 years. So I am not in the business of buying and flipping and doing any of that.
Selling wasn't part of the plan, at least not yet.
I just feel, particularly in Seattle, I think the Seattle City Council has decided that the landlords in the city, particularly in the city, have to do all the heavy lifting to sort of alleviate all the social ills that plague Seattle right now. Homelessness, high rents, social inequities. Let's fix them all in the housing market. And let's have the landlords be responsible for taking care of all of those things.
Specifically in Seattle, she points to several laws recently passed.
I don't know how else to describe them except draconian. And I feel politically I'm a very liberal voting person and thinking person. But I feel that first in time was almost impossible to live with, impossible to orchestrate. The new roommate law that they passed last year is just ridiculous as far as having any control over the house whatsoever. People don't get into the landlord business because they have nothing else to do. It is a business.
And then there's the winter eviction moratorium in Seattle.
Very, very difficult. The winter eviction moratorium was like, really, so we're responsible for housing all these people.
Her message to city leaders?
You are losing people like me who have been fair. I have been told by some of my tenants that I'm one of the best landlords they've ever had when they've lost jobs. I've rented to people who have gone through bankruptcies. I've given them a second chance. You are not giving me the opportunity to rent to any of those people. You are blocking all of those people out of the system.
Obviously, Carol is making money off the sale of her property, so that's not really the issue here. But it does raise questions about the possibility of a shrinking housing supply as the city and the state tackle the homeless crisis.
The cumulative effect on housing providers and this erroneous rental regulation that they're being that's driving them to do what Carol's done, and that's to get out of the business. It's to sell their property. It's to look at alternative investments.
And gee, I'm going to say this is exactly what I have been fearing with all these rules and regulations that have been passed by a city council, which I think does not have enough of a business sense to understand the impact. So it sounds great if you're a renter. It sounds great if you are, you know, and absolutely renters need help. But you can't affect one without affecting the other. And so much of the burden has been left for landlords.
Ursula, I sent you a text. I don't know if you saw that. And what's the roommate law? Do you know what that is? Because I heard her say roommate law. If there's any experts out there, please text that. I just need to know that from me. But I do want to respond to listening to that lady talk just right there. First of all, I loved. Oh, what are you going to say?
Well, I can explain it. And so basically it requires people, so landlords, to accept roommates and immediate family as additional occupants on a rental. So basically the tenants have to tell the landlord of each additional person's name within the first 30 days of going into that home. Again, it gives preferential treatment to the renter, not the landlord.
Right. Okay. I gotcha. I had never heard of it before, but I want to speak to something that she said that I can totally relate to. No, not as the landlord, but as the renter. 8 years ago, I had terrible credit, absolutely terrible credit. I could not qualify to rent at a regular place, at a leasing agency or anything like that. So I had to go through Craigslist, Ursula, to be able to get an apartment. And in doing so, I met people who were renting their homes, and they, you know, like they did a credit check on me, and they saw that my credit wasn't good and all that stuff. But they took a chance on me. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. I had two different landlords that took chances on me, and I made good, and they really helped me out. The reason why I'm sharing that story is to say this. Because of things that are happening today, because of rent moratoriums that are happening, and this continued, which I understand some of the rent protections for renters, but I want to be clear, for those out there who need a second chance or need an opportunity to have that landlord help them, those days are going to come to an end. And I guarantee you, if I was in that same boat as I was before, Ursula, there's some landlords that'd be like, no, I can't help you right now. I got to protect myself. And that's what she's trying to say.
Yes.
Those are the landlords that are being lost with these rules.
Yes. We're not talking about the big, you know, property management companies. I don't have as much of a, I don't worry about them, but I worry about exactly the kind of landlord that Hannah talked about in her piece. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones who would more likely give you a rent break if you're, my father-in-law was that person who would rather rent for a lower amount because he knew that he had great tenants versus having to charge, you know, these really, really high rates because there's going to be a big turnover or, you know, they're going to be forced to do all sorts of crazy improvements, et cetera, et cetera. So, again, when you only address one part of the equation, something else is going to be affected, and that's where the city council was short-sighted. Okay, and we're going to go to number two.
Number two.
The COVID vaccine is not yet going to be required in Washington schools, but as you can imagine, it is going to be debated ahead of next school year. The State Board of Health says they're not going to consider adding it to the list of required immunizations just yet because it has not been fully approved by the FDA. Right now, it has emergency authorization. And as we've been reporting, just last week, Pfizer began the process of applying for that approval for patients who are 16 years and older, but these reviews usually take a couple of months. So if the CDC advisory committee does authorize Pfizer, 370,000 Washington kids would become immediately eligible.
I like the idea of kids getting vaccines. I like the idea of kids getting vaccines and going back to school.
Where are you with the mandate?
Is there a mandate on vaccinations for kids to go to school in the first place, even before the pandemic?
With other vaccines, yes.
So why is it that everybody's okay with the other vaccines that are required, but you're not okay with...
Because they call this one experimental. Hmm. Well, that's not what it is, but it has emergency authorization.
So here's my answer to that. Clearly, yes, I am okay with the mandates. You can't be okay with one set of vaccines, but then you're not okay with the other. So I'm going to stay consistent. if there is a school that's saying, that's requiring for my children to have the vaccine in order to come back to school, that I'm going to abide by that. So, yes, I'm okay with the mandate, Ursula.
Or if they don't want to have their children vaccinated, I guess there would always be the option of continuing to do at-home learning, I suppose, or finding schools where they don't have it as a mandate, which would probably generally be more of your private schools. Mm-hmm. Now, again, right now there is no vaccine mandate, and the rule is that they're going to wait for the FDA to fully approve it, but I'm pretty sure that's going to happen, and I think we're going to just have this huge battle coming up.
Let me ask you about what's going on in South Carolina, so, and take it a step further when it comes to masks. South Carolina Governor Henry McMaster, right now, he's addressing issues about masks in schools. So here's the deal. He issued an executive order yesterday that empowers parents to decide whether their children should wear masks in schools or not. Ursula, do you believe that a governor should be able to give that power to the parents?
No. And I say that because then that opens a Pandora's box. So then what other powers are you going to allow parents to decide? If parents decide that, hey, even though there are other kids who have peanut allergies, I'm going to fill my kid's lunchbox with their favorite snacks and include peanuts. There are certain rules that have to be made at a local decision, at a local level. And in this case, those who know the best as to what happens at the school would be the people who are at the school. So I have an issue because I think this is more a problem with adults than it is with kids. I know they're like, oh, it's so sad to see kids suffering with their masks on. I think the kids are dealing with it better than adults are. I really think it's just become kind of a political thing. This is a political statement. Is it really that big of a deal for your kids to wear a mask, mm-hmm. you know, so that they can go to school and have everybody be okay? To think that it's not being spread at schools is a farce. I mean, it is. Okay. We've seen it. Schools have reopened and it is being spread. Yes, they're not getting as sick, but there's still people are spreading it. So, yeah, it shouldn't be up to the parents. No. How about you?
No, it shouldn't be. But this, I think when you said open up Pandora's box, I think, Ursula, that box is already open. I think that before the pandemic, when it comes to what kids and parents and what should they should do when it comes to schools, I think it was one thing. But now going forward, I think that this vaccine or no vaccine, the mask or no mask is going to be a continued political divide. And the thing that is terrible about this political divide is this. Over the last few days, I haven't brought it up on the air, not one time. People say, gee, you guys are always trying to scare people. And that's not true. I have sent you, how many days in a row have I sent you texts of someone I've known has died or someone that's on the ventilator right now because of COVID?
And, I think at least three.
And so you never asked me if they were Democrat or Republican.
Mm-mm.
You know what I mean?
Doesn't because matter because the virus doesn't care.
The virus doesn't care about your political affiliations or how you feel one way or the other. So I'll say this. And then one last thing I want to say is I did get a text that made a good point about the vaccine. And they let me know that the flu shots aren't required for kids to go to school. So I guess that's a good point as well. And so that might have the COVID vaccine not be mandatory for schools, especially high school and below.
Number three.
A driver who was accused of hitting and killing a man because she was looking at her phone and posting on Facebook is now facing vehicular homicide charges. Carly Cecil admitted at the scene that she did make a post right before that accident. Cairo 7's Graham Johnson reports from Tacoma.
Carly Cecil could not hold back the tears as she appeared before a judge from jail charged with vehicular homicide. Her boyfriend, best friend, and sister were all in court.
And I know she's dying inside right now. You know, like, I know she feels so bad.
State troopers say yesterday morning, Cecil was driving in the right lane of northbound I-5 in Tacoma when her car struck and killed 78-year-old Keong Park, who was changing his flat tire. Investigators say Cecil admitted not looking at the road as she passed by because she was checking Facebook on her phone. This Mother's Day memories photo appeared on her timeline minutes before the crash. Court papers say Carly Cecil pulled over right after the crash and called 911. She has no criminal record. The judge released her from jail.
I'd ask the public to give her the benefit of the doubt. This could happen to anybody.
Today, the judge, Cecil's attorney, and her family all gave the same message. Put down your phone and drive.
It's not worth it. No text is worth it.
Stay off your phone and be safe and to try to get back to your family.
And I feel for that family because it could be the other way around. And we know that.
She's an amazing mom. Yeah. And she wouldn't want this example for her daughter. So I know she'll do better.
So if she's convicted of vehicular homicide, that comes with a prison sentence. I got to look up the sentencing range, but that could come up, you know, to years behind bars. Would someone in this case, like in her case, what she's done, she's admitted it. She doesn't have a criminal record. I mean, someone died, which is just awful. But I was kind of struggling as I was thinking, does it do society good to put her behind bars for, let's say, 5 or 10 years or longer?
Well, not on the same, not the same as the vehicular homicide being to do with drunk driving, right? I think that that's different than maybe the text or texting and driving. But do there still needs to be a consequence, though, right? And there has to be, because if there's not a consequence, then I don't understand how people would not do it. And I think that more and more we'll hear stories like this. And in this case, I wanted to just say this sounds like a really sad situation. I think that a lot of us have made the unfortunate mistake of being on our phones, and I don't think any of us have wanted to hurt somebody in doing so.
Well, I'm wondering if, though, the way we're feeling about it is because many of us have done this too, and it could be us. And I say that, is it really different from drunk driving or distracted driving? Vehicular homicide is a Class A felony punishable by up to life in prison and a maximum fine of $50,000. And of course, it's not going to be life in prison, but there's the possibility of that.
Yeah.
Text us at 98973. Our listeners are always so wise. Text us. What do you think would be an appropriate punishment?
Right. All right. Coming up next, Michael Medved will join us to let us know what he thinks about what's happening with Liz Cheney. It's Gian Ursula.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us on the Gian Ursula Show on this beautiful Wednesday morning. It is one of our top stories today. Wyoming Congresswoman Liz Cheney has been ousted from her leadership role in the Republican Party, but she says she is not giving up on the GOP. She plans to seek a fourth term in 2022, and she is committed to making sure former President Trump is not reelected.
I think that the party is in a place that we've got to bring it back from, and we've got to get back to a position where we are a party that can fight for conservative principles, that can fight for substance. We cannot be dragged backward by the very dangerous lies of a former president.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham says today's decision was not about her vote for impeachment. He says it was about her belief that President Trump should be purged from the GOP. And we've asked our friend and colleague Michael Medved to join us now and give us his perspective. And I'm happy to say he joins us in studio this morning. Good morning.
It's a pleasure. Actually, the first time in a year that I've been back in studio
I know. It feels so good to be able to see you in person.
Yeah, congratulations on being vaccinated, as
yes.
I am. I mean,
I know,
and everybody
good.
Out there should do what they can to get vaccinated.
Absolutely.
Something you're not allowed to say on Conservative Talk Radio.
Apparently. So I'm told. Michael, your reaction. How are you feeling? G was feeling depressed about this whole situation. How are you feeling this morning with this?
I'm very depressed, and I feel sorry for Liz Cheney, who I know a little bit. I know the family. And look, here's the difficulty. She gave a very emotional speech last night. She yes. reacted emotionally today. She said something in the speech last night. She said, if you remain silent in the face of a lie, you will only empower the liar. Now, that sounds good, but it's not true. And I'll tell you what's not true about it. The best way to respond to Trump's lies, and he tells them all the time, ignore them. And honestly, I had been encouraged basically over the last couple of months. President Trump has kind of faded from the scene. I mean, he's no longer dominating the news. He loves this because all of a sudden he's the center of attention again. The best way to disarm Trump, the best way to get our politics to be arguing about real things other than the nonsense that he's going to, he can't tweet it anymore, but he's going to have his own media platform,
blog,
his own social media, whatever it is, whatever he has. More power to him. He should enjoy his retirement. He's having a very nice little intimate dinner with about 1,000 people who are paying $250,000 a plate. This is at Bedminster. It's not even Mar-a-Lago, Bedminster, New Jersey. And again, it's the kind of thing I was thinking, should I talk about this on the air? I don't want to talk about Trump. I'm tired of talking about Trump.
You know what?
Let it alone.
We have tried to avoid it, in all honesty. You know, the election's over. We're going to move on.
Right.
But then it comes up again because now what has happened, and someone who I am actually very proud of, Liz Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm proud
of Jamie Herrera.
And Jamie Herrera Butler, who voted and once again stood up for principle over party.
Yeah, but are we going to now relitigate the case of Liz Cheney and continue to relitigate what happened in the Capitol building and January 6th and to continue to relitigate? Now, it's bad enough that the idiots in Arizona are doing that comical, ridiculous recount of 2 million ballots in Maricopa County. Let it alone. I honestly, there is no future for the Republican Party if we're fighting constantly about the Trump legacy. Will he make a comeback? Does he deserve censure? Does he deserve praise? Does he deserve a place on Rushmore? It's not interesting. It's not relevant. I don't think he's going to run for president again. I don't think he should run for president again. And there are so many important things about what the president is doing, some of which I really dread. I think the spending is way out of control.
Yeah.
And it's really time for Republicans to start saying, okay, this is what we're going to do positive for the country.
Yeah.
It's not positive for the country to argue about Trump, to fire Liz Cheney over Trump. The one thing she could have done is basically embrace that idea is the only way our party can move on from Trump is to stop talking about him, to stop debating him.
Michael?
Yes, sir.
I got to tell you, oftentimes, this morning, the first thing I sent Ursula at 6-something this morning, I said, we got to talk to Michael Medved today. And yes, I don't want to talk about Donald Trump. But then when I see a headline that says over 100 Republicans, including former officials, threaten to split from the GOP, why are they why is that a headline? What's happening there?
What's happening there is one of the reasons I don't want to talk about Trump is every time his name is mentioned, it hurts my party. I want the GOP to be vital. I want it to be organized around doing good things for the country, which it it can do. I mean, I'm happy that President Biden is meeting with a bipartisan leadership group today. And who knows? Maybe we can focus on that. But look, I think President Trump, for those people who want to see him brought to justice, there are now 26 pending lawsuits against him. There are, I think, more investigations than that from various states for racketeering, for tax fraud, for he'll have to deal with that. And again, he just loved. Did you see Trump's statement, G, today about Liz Cheney?
I did not.
It was so gracious. It was so elegant.
Are you being facetious?
Of course I'm being facetious. We're talking about Donald Trump.
I was going to say, wait, what happened?
He
what
said she's it? A horrible human being with no personality.
Oh, no.
And then attacked her family and said.
And now you know why people don't want to go against him. Every time we go against him, I'm telling you right now, our text line is going to be full of hate.
Right.
But Michael, since the beginning of this year, especially after what we saw on January 6th, oftentimes I hear your words, and I did not think that Donald Trump would have such a stronghold on this party. And you keep saying that he's going away, and I have to respectfully disagree with you. I don't think he's going away. As a matter of fact, it is impossible for him to be ignored because look at what we're – I just said 100 Republicans are wanting to split from the GOP. We just seen what happened with Liz Cheney. You just told me about the dinner that 1,000 people at $250,000 a plate. We are going to be talking about him at the end of this year. When is it going to stop?
It's going to stop, I think, when people – determined that he is irrelevant. And I just, you see, a lot of the people who are really deep dish Trump loyalists, there's this guy named Madison Crawl, the newly elected.
Oh, is it the guy who was in North Carolina?
Yes,
yeah,
that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Is it Crowley? I can't remember.
Yeah,
but Crawthorne.
Crawthorne, thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to forget him too. But did you see his tweet this morning? Liz Cheney, goodbye. I mean, come on.
The guy's like he's 25 year old and he's showing his immaturity. I know that he's very young and he's very attractive. And I think he doesn't have a whole lot going there. I mean, I hate to say this, but
you said it.
Yeah. Well, I think that some of the things that he has said since he's been elected would prove that.
Yes. I mean, what's so bizarre about this is it seems to me, and as I mentioned, I'm sympathetic to Liz Cheney. I think she's an honorable person. And for people to celebrate this division in the party is nuts. Here's the point.
What does it say that G and I are feeling sad about it?
I feel sad about it.
Well, for the country, this is
yes.
I mean, we have this devastating war in the Middle East. There are now 6 people who've been killed in Israel. There are about 40 who have been killed in Gaza. It's a very serious matter. And what are we talking about? I mean, look, I am very, very much going to do whatever I can to make sure that Jamie Herrera Butler gets reelected. I certainly plan to support Liz Cheney in Wyoming, where I don't think she'll have a problem getting reelected. I think she will be able to do that partially because she has a bunch of Trumpier and Trumpiest candidates all running against her. So,
but maybe the thing is, the Republican Party needs a new beacon of light. Who is that beacon of hope for the Republican Party?
It's not Kevin McCarthy. Probably not Mitch McConnell, who's 79 years old. Maybe Nikki Haley, if she comes out of hiding. But
she's afraid of Trump.
Yes, she did just a little bit of questioning, and then he came back and slammed her. I honestly believe the best way to hurt Trump, if you want to limit his impact, ignore him as much as possible.
But those leaders that you just brought up, none of them can ignore him. You can ignore him.
No,
not
very well.
Ursula and I can.
But I've heard some Republicans call you a liberal now.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a rhino. And, you know, fine. Right. Again, I am a Reagan Republican. I don't think Reagan would support Trump.
No.
Not a chance.
That's just it. Michael, thank you.
What a pleasure. The things will get better. It's springtime.
Yes, I agree.
And Kalenic's coming to the Mariners. So.
There you go.
Thanks, Michael.
Hey, G. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man. Hey, coming up next, we're going to do scenarios, but Ursula and I, especially, we need a reset. And Ursula, I figured something out, and the reason why I have been struggling all week during the show. I'll explain that next as G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Coming up at 11:06, we get into agree to disagree. But right now, Ursula, usually we do scenarios, and scenarios is brought to you by Farrah.com. But this time, I figured I'd spend a few minutes for us to hit the reset button a little bit.
Sounds good. Will.
So I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again just in case someone didn't hear it. When Baby G was in second grade, he attended Santa Slow Elementary School over in West Seattle. And he had gotten trouble because he had gotten to a fight at school. And he told the teacher that the reason why he fought is because his dad told him anytime somebody puts a hand on him, he is to fight back. And if he doesn't fight back, then his dad would be mad at him. Right? Mm-hmm. So I got called up to the school, of course, and I was younger then, of course, and I would go into the school and I talk to the principal, and I'm talking to her about the what happened. And she had said, so this is what your son said. Is that true? I said, yeah, absolutely. I said, if anybody puts their hand on my son, he is to hit them back. That's what I said. And the teacher, the principal says, well, I don't think that that's a good idea. Long story short, I couldn't understand what she was saying. Mm-hmm. But what she told me was, is by you telling your son to fight back, you're giving him no other way to work through those things and learn. Mm-hmm. You're trying to use your views on that, and your example to him will have him doing other things that's not in the best interest for himself.
Right.
And by the end of the conversation, I was like, I never thought about it like that. And I first of all, I don't even remember this lady, but she was phenomenal. She really helped me understand how I had to be a better example. And my teachings was wrong. I bring that story up to say, I understand now, Ursula, what I think you and I have been going through over the last week. Before, when I used to get ready to do the show, oftentimes whether I want to make a point and I want to prove myself to be right and I want to be right here and I'll show you and all those things, it's getting to the point now is I'm seeing where so much of this dividing and fighting and extremism is hurting so many people in our country. So sometimes when I go to talk about something, even earlier today, I have a stutter and I have stop and and I'm thinking way too much through things, Ursula, because I know that what we say on a daily basis really has an impact on how others are in the community, in the world. And I didn't mean to talk that long, but I had to get that off my chest.
Well, the reality is, there aren't always pat answers. You cannot make everything black and white, because that's not how the world is. And I think it's okay to say, hey, we understand this side of things, but you know, when we look at this, we can also understand this. And I think that's perfectly fine. And I think so much of our problem is that we feel like there's only one right answer. The only right answer is the truth.
Good stuff, Ursula. Coming up next, agree to disagree. It's she and Ursula.